All right, time for some Jays talk. Show Ali, Daniele, Franceschi with you. We're live on Sportsnet.ca on the Sportsnet app. And as always, across the Sportsnet radio network. Shoot us a text, 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line is always open. Bold predictions on tap for the final spring edition of Jays Talk. Of course, if you are wondering about calls, as I always say, don't worry, Blair and Barker and myself as well. Occasionally, we will take your calls during the regular season, but the phone lines will open for good starting on Thursday for opening day. But for now, we will stick with text at 590-590. So certainly, if you have a question about today's ball game, you have any bold predictions for the upcoming 2024 regular season, shoot those over on the People's Text Line. Before we do the bold predictions, Daniele, let's get to a little bit of what we saw from today's ball game, a 2-0 Blue Jays loss to the Phillies in Clearwater. As Chris LaRue said, it's not exactly, there wasn't a lot to talk about offensively from the Blue Jays. I got to think that seeing basically every member of the team play right into the ninth inning, effectively, I would imagine that means we're not going to see any of them play tomorrow. Or if they do play, they'll play for like one inning or one AB or whatever it might be. And then that's probably it, I guess.
Yeah, you and I sort of touched on this before the game in terms of how the playing time would be distributed today. I think, as you put it, pretty strong indication based on the fact that most of the regulars played, if not the entire ball game, at least eight innings worth of baseball today, that they're going to be completely shut down. I will say, seeing Alejandro Kirk be out there for the entire ball game made me very, very nervous. I'm just glad that it's done. He's now he can go back into the clubhouse, go through his recovery routine, and then go home and relax. And that's it. Done. Because it was very nerve-wracking, especially once we got through. By the fifth inning, I would say I'll even give the benefit of the doubt. But once Bassett's outing was officially complete, at that point I was like, okay, I think we're good here. Give me something different. But I think that would have been my main takeaway. The other guys, sure. But I do think it signals that tomorrow you're going to see a lineup full of minor league guys who are going to end up playing in, you know, AAA, AA, whatever the case may be. And they wanted to give this as a final dress rehearsal for the guys that are likely to start on opening day, give them the opportunity to go out there and see what they can do offensively. Hopefully this is an anomaly and we don't have to worry about this. It's also not going to reflect well on one of my bold predictions, show in terms of the offense. But yeah, like, you know, the first guy to come out of this ball game for the Blue Jays, was, and I'm just looking at it right now, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. And that happened in the seventh inning. Up until that point, everybody was in the whole way through, and then we had a couple of late substitutions in the eighth inning. But beyond that, 100% show. They all nine regulars were in there for the bulk of the game.
I was hesitating to read too much into Kirk's presence because he wasn't the only guy who stayed. Like, if he was the only person who'd stayed in it, I'd have been like, what are they doing? He might have been the first guy I would have thought they got out there. But I also do wonder, to a certain extent, if that also tells you a little bit about how they view their reliever options, because we did see after Bassett came out, in order, we got to see Chad Green, Yenesis Cabrera, and Jimmy Garcia. And we know Romano and Swanson are on the shelf for, you know, what everyone hopes is a short period of time. But at the very least, to start the season, you know, if there are any high leverage opportunities, situations that might arise, you're not going to have Romano and Swanson, at least for the first week, I'm guessing. So if that is the case, then I kind of wonder if they felt good about the idea of having Kirk catching for Green, Cabrera, and Garcia. And of course, it's not as though he's never caught them before. They all had extended usage, certainly last year, and for Garcia for a couple of years now, but you know, so it's not as though there's no familiarity there, but it may be just a chance to get that going in what is probably Kirk's last extended start. And like I said, even if he does start, you're not going to see a lot of relievers out of inning number one tomorrow. So I can't imagine you're going to see that. So if that's the case, then I kind of wonder if that's a bit of the situation there. And on top of that, you had said to me in the pregame show when I asked you about how they might handle the closer role on this team with no Romano. I still kind of think it might be closer by committee, but I know you're a big Chad Green guy. And I will say Chad Green acquitted himself quite well today. He got three strikeouts against Bryce Harper, JTL Realmuto, and Alec Bohm, all of whom who are not only MLB regulars, but are like very talented MLB players, to say the least. So I thought that boded pretty well for Chad Green after he had a pretty rough start to the spring, I'd say.
Yeah, I agree. It was a very strong inning of work for Chad Green. Topping out 95, I think it was 95.3 on the fastball. So pretty good with the in terms of the velocity on the heater. But striking out the middle, the beef of the order for the Philadelphia Phillies. Three guys, as you put it, that are not just like everyday major leaguers. No, these are elite players in the big leagues. We're talking about one of the best catchers in baseball, one of the best overall well-rounded hitters in Bryce Harper, and one of the best third basemen in Alec Bohm. Guys that are coming off massive seasons and are going to be relied upon to have huge productive years for the Phillies in 2024. I do think, and in seeing sort of the sequencing of how the Jays went about deploying those three guys, right, going from Green to then Yenesis Cabrera and then to Jimmy Garcia, I am sort of now, I feel like I'm going to be more in your camp of, I do think it will be closer by committee. I will not feel comfortable when Jimmy Garcia is walking out of the pen to start a ninth inning. I'm sorry. I'm just going to put it out there. I will be very transparent and honest about it. And by and large, he's been very good for them. Like throughout his entire tenure with the Toronto Blue Jays, he's been very serviceable, very solid and steady as a high leverage back end of the bullpen reliever. That being said, I just feel better about the body of work throughout his career as it pertains to Chad Green. Yenesis Cabrera, I think, is an interesting, him and Tim Mays are interesting options because in this space right now where there isn't a true de facto closer, like right, there's no Romano there, maybe matchups are more important than we think. Like maybe if you're going into a situation, I think Chris pointed this out as well on the broadcast, Chris LaRue, that if you're going into a situation where there are two lefties lined up, maybe there are two really good lefties, but you might want to go lefty on lefty. So maybe it's Meza getting a crack at it. Maybe it's Yenesis Cabrera getting a crack at it. I do think it's going to be matchup dependent and more of a committee approach with the closer situation, although I would like to see them defer to Chad Green potentially to get the first opportunity.
I've also never been someone who has been completely married to the idea of the closer must pitch in the ninth inning. You know what I mean? Like
that's
in
a good point.
Like in the idea of, to use today's batters on the Phillies as an example, if Bryce Harper and Trey Turner and JT Realmuto are coming up, but it's the eighth inning, then there's no real reason why you can't use your closer then and then get the guys afterwards. In theory, your closer is your best pitcher to set down three batters, no matter who it is. And if that's the case, then you should, in theory, be able to use that guy anytime you want. Obviously, you're saving him for as close to the end of the game as possible. But if the highest dangerous, most dangerous opponents are coming up in the eighth inning or in the final out of the seventh inning and two batters into the eighth inning, like you shouldn't necessarily be married to, oh, well, we can't use reliever X until the ninth because it's the ninth. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like that's something to think about. And the Blue Jays have not necessarily done that. So I feel like they will stick to the more traditional usage of a reliever, but I've always been a bigger fan of the most dangerous batters gets the guy who is the closer. And then you figure it out afterwards.
All three of those guys acquitted themselves well today. Like they all pitched pretty well.
Right.
They were all productive, all efficient. It's not like any of them, it was a very labor intensive outing. They all went out there and threw strikes. Chad Green to Yenesis Cabrera to Jimmy Garcia, all very efficient. So overall, three really impressive, strong performances and clean innings for those three guys. You know what's funny? So you mentioned I agree with you, by the way. I think that is a more novel concept or the idea of, in theory, that makes a lot of sense,
right,
where your best reliever is supposed to be utilized at the most important time of the game. So if that happens to be in the eighth inning when Aaron Judge is coming up with, you know, Soto and Stanton as well, sandwiched in between there, then, yeah, I would probably feel best. I want to go and make sure I'm putting my best foot forward with the best weapon that I have out of the bullpen. You don't want to know why that is tricky to navigate? It's because saves are still a stat. That's the thing. Now, are we ever going to get to a point where saves don't matter? Because analytics have veered us off into so many bizarre and weird paths. That's an interesting one, actually. Like, will saves matter in the same way? Because
sure,
maybe, like, you still, and even if we want to say, is there going to be a stat that, you know, somebody develops where it's holds and saves combined together? Like, you can something new, or you just put, instead of us looking strictly at saves to determine a guy that is a nails, lights out, back end of the bullpen closer, we just say, well, okay, we got to account for both holds and saves to determine, well, this tells us a guy is being utilized in the most important moments all the time.
It's true, because they're otherwise, unless you're like really digging deep into stats, there's not a lot of not a lot of statistics that show you, if you just look at a box score, how valuable a person's leverage innings were necessarily, without actually going in and saying, okay, well, he pitched against players X, Y, and Z literally
every
time out.
There's not like a stress index.
Yes, right.
You know, like we can't, that's great. So Bowden Francis, let's use him as an example. Although, and I think I portend great things for him this year. I really do.
Okay.
But let's look at him. Like last year, he puts up a 1.70 ERA, and you might say, yeah, you know what? Pretty decent sample size, logs a lot of innings. The reality is he pitched in garbage time, right? Like he pitched in cleanup mop-up duty. So the numbers are, it's difficult for us to actually go in there and say, okay, what's real and what's not? Deciphering what's real and what's a mirage per se. But if we look at Romano, who I don't know what he ended up with in terms of ERA, but we look at his production and you say, oh, okay, it's not an apples to apples comparison in terms of straight pure numbers. There's no stress index to indicate this guy pitches in the most high leverage moments all the time. And this is why, like, I don't know, maybe that is something these analytic nerds can develop. Seriously, something that can account for that. There, you can value the amount of pitches, the amount of innings, the amount of strikeouts, the workload that a specific pitcher endures in those type of high stress situations.
It's interesting you use the word stress, because that is a word I've heard pitchers use a lot, right? Like they refer to, and I think I've heard Bassett say it. I've heard Gausman say it. I've heard others say it too, not on the Blue Jays, but I've heard a lot of pitchers over the last several years use the word stressful innings more and more frequently. And I think that is what they talk about, right? I tend to imagine all innings are stressful for pitchers, but I mean, I'm sure there are some innings that are more stressful than others, yeah. i.e. when you are facing the Trey Turners and Bryce Harpers of the world. So, yeah, I would love to see that as a stat. Speaking of the rotation, I did want to chat a little bit about Chris Bassett. He had to grind a little bit through the first inning. This is true, but he got a couple of quick outs after the Blue Jays went down 2-0, and that was the final score of this game. So everyone largely pitched pretty well, including Bassett.
Yep.
And it's still, I know this is not new by any means, but it is still quite a sight to see Bassett throw like a 91 mile an hour fastball in and then like a rainbow arced 69 mile an hour curveball. Like that has got to screw with your timing so hard if you are a batter. And I love watching it. So that will forever be one of my favorite things to watch when Bassett's on the mound. The rotation as it stands, Berríos on opening day, Daniele. Mm-hmm. Bassett's outing today lines him up for Friday. And the second start of the rotation, yeah, he'll get the second start of the rotation. The third start of the rotation, Ben Shulman saying during the game. So Kevin Gausman will pitch in the Grapefruit League game tomorrow. So he will get some in-game action in the final spring game of the preseason, let's call it. In theory, that lines him up to pitch the third spot in the order. And of course, I'm sure we'll find out more about this tomorrow. But it makes me wonder if you believe he's not going to pitch in the first series of the season. It makes me wonder if we don't see something like Berríos, Bassett, Mitch White. You say Kikuchi, Bowden Francis, and use Kikuchi to split up Mitch White and Bowden Francis a little bit there. So that works. Francis gets the first game in Houston. You get Berríos and Bassett to end the series at Minute Maid Park. There's an off day. And then because there's an off day, and then if you think Gausman is ready by then, it'll still line him up correctly, essentially, to be ready for the Yankees home opener in the Bronx. And then you'd get Gausman's first start of the season coming against, of all people, Marcus Stroman in New York, which I think would be quite a sight. So yeah. I think that'd be really interesting. Of course, if you want to push Gausman a little bit and you want to give Kikuchi that quote-unquote regular start, you could still have Gausman start a game against the Yankees, if not the home opener in the Bronx, and that it would still line him up in theory to pitch, you know, either against the Mariners in Toronto or elsewhere. It certainly seems pretty likely he's not going to miss that much time, but you do also want to be cautious with the guy who is like essentially right now the odds-on favorite to win the AL Cy Young.
Totally agree. I would say err on the side of caution as much as possible. But I think this actually plays really nicely into what you suggested before the game in terms of, you know, instead of Kikuchi automatically being penciled in as the game three starter over the next weekend against Tampa, well, why not deviate slightly, push him back a day, and then go with your quote unquote, your Gausman slot there. And if that ends up being Mitch White, sure, Mitch White start, and you piggyback him with Trevor Richards or whomever you decide
Yariel
to go.
Yariel Rodriguez, maybe?
See, I'm less bullish on that. I would prefer that they be patient with Yariel Rodriguez. I think there are a lot of really encouraging and positive signs, but don't rush it.
Sure.
Just don't rush it. And that's the same thing we talk about with like Ricky Tiedemann. Just be patient. just be patient. I know it's hard, but just make sure you don't do anything to disrupt that man's development, his ramp-up process. Because for Yariel Rodriguez, he also, just like Ricky Tiedemann being a prospect, he hasn't pitched a ton either.
That's true.
So you got to be very judicious and careful with how you manage his workload. But I think it does play into, if Gausman is really this close, where it's almost like a 50-50 shot, let's say tomorrow he goes out, comes away from that outing feeling good, able to recover quickly, responds well, also obviously performs decent. Like, we're not saying he can't go out there and give up a few runs. No, as long as he looks the part and feels good, then I think it's going to be really dicey. It's going to be a 50-50 call as to if he pitches in the first series or not. I would, though, personally, even if he feels great, I would say just take a little bit longer. Just take that extra turn through. And I think that's where it would make a ton of sense. You place your sort of your de facto bullpen day or your spot start
right
on the third day and line it up for the next turn through the rotation. I would feel good about that. I would really feel good about that.
Yeah, and I know Mitch White is the guy who would likely see the most innings in a quote-unquote spot start, yeah. But I can't imagine he is going to be, not in the same way Bowden Francis probably will be, in the sense that Bowden Francis is likely to see a lot more innings than Mitch White will this season, just because he earned the confidence of the pitching staff, like Pete Walker and company, as well as the other pitchers on the team, so early that they said a couple of days ago that he's in the starting rotation. Mm-hmm. This is not an end of camp battle. And we kind of figured even like 2 weeks ago, yep, that Bowden Francis probably deserved to be on this team.
If I can add one thing on Bowden Francis, yeah, yeah, and in terms of his spot in the rotation, this level of security he might have, I think, like, it's locked. It's his spot. I say that to say he's not holding it for anybody. So if Alek Manoah wants that spot, no, he's going to have to go down and earn that spot. It's not going to be handed to him. I think that's where the Blue Jays have arrived. They've arrived at that point now where, you know, Alek Manoah was going to be given the benefit of the doubt throughout spring training. But because he hasn't pitched and we haven't seen him, and yes, he made the one start, but we haven't seen him. He's been gone and he's well behind in the ramp up process. You have to go down to the minors and earn that opportunity. And if Bowden Francis happens to pitch exceedingly well, sorry, man, you're not getting that spot back. I think that's where we're at. He's not there as a placeholder. He's there to earn a permanent spot. And that's because he's pitched well enough to do it. So I think he's going to be deployed as a traditional starter in every sense. Go as deep as you can, man. Pitch well. You're going to get the opportunity to take the ball and run with it.
That sounds like a dual bold prediction to me. That's like about yes. That's like a Bowden Francis and Alek Manoah bold prediction.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think. Speaking of which, I did want to get to our bold prediction. So you have some bold predictions. I have some, and I also managed to, in addition to all the listeners' bold predictions, and I see a number of here on the text line, 590-590, name and location, please. I also have a number of bold predictions from some of our pals, some voices you have heard on Jay's Talk over the last, let's call it a couple of years. So I have six guest bold predictions for the listeners, and certainly all the texters' bold predictions as well. But why don't I get some of yours to start? You kind of already got us started off, Daniele, with Bowden Francis and Alek Manoah.
Yeah,
but so you give me some of your bold predictions, and we can get started here.
Okay, so first and foremost, I'll start on the offensive side of the ball, which is weird because, I mean, they were shut out today. But I'm going to say the Blue Jays will have a top 10 offense in baseball this season. So I don't know that, statistically speaking, it's not like they have to make jump leaps and bounds, to be honest. If we look at last year, they were 16th in homers, 16th in RBI. They were top 10 in doubles, batting average, and they were just outside the top 10. They ranked 11th in OPS. So it's not like they're terribly off the pace, but they were bad offensively.
Right.
It's funny, like statistically, not that bad, middle of the pack. But when you watch them with your eyes, oh God, it was bad. It was rough. So that being said, I think here's where I feel like they're probably going to take the biggest leap forward. It's with runners in scoring position. And I don't want to point to spring training as the be-all and end-all, but in fact, like, they've hit the ball well in all facets throughout the spring. And what's reassuring about that is it's not from the, you know, minor league guys who are, you know, raking. You know, yes, you have a couple good stories. Like Nathan Lucas is a good story, hitting 450. Brian Servin, who's going to be on the team, leading the team in RBI. Great story. It's a lot of fun, hitting for power. You know what, though? It's Vlad, it's Bo, it's Springer, it's Farsho, it's Kirk. Those guys have by and large, had a really strong spring. And so I think there's reason to be optimistic. I feel like they're capable of hitting for some more power and being a better overall offense in 2024. Top 10 offense, baby.
All right, I like it. I like that. I would certainly take it after the 2023 season we all had to watch for the better part of a whole calendar year. So I would absolutely take that. I have actually, a lot of my bold predictions are essentially overs on home runs, essentially. Nice. I like the home run totals, right? So one of mine is, I think would lend itself well to establishing them towards being a top 10 offense, and it's a George Springer bold prediction in that he hits 30-plus home runs this season. And I say this because so far in the spring, George Springer has looked a lot better, and the home run total might be less important than maybe the runs total, for example, overall, the RBI total, but George Springer has looked, I think he has looked ready enough and has answered enough questions for me in a relatively limited sample size, as with all things in the spring, but he looks ready to not have the power outage that we saw last year. And a lot of it is not just, it's not just how hard is he hitting the ball, because everyone knows I love my hard hit stats here, but it is about also how good of a contact is he making, because like we talked about in the pregame, there are too many opportunities or too many situations last season, Daniele, where Springer just didn't, like, he wasn't making great contact, even if he was having violent swings. So I would like to see more of that from George Springer. So I'm going with, for my first bold prediction, I'm going to say 30-plus home runs. I want to read some texts here as well.
Absolutely.
Because we got quite a number of them. I see here, okay, Eddie in Fort Erie. Eddie says, my bold prediction for 2024 is that Kevin Kiermaier will hit a new career high in home runs. So I like that one. And
nice.
I think that's also a fun one, because we have seen Kevin Kiermaier hit for a little more power this far this spring. So I'm looking here on Baseball Reference. Kevin Kiermaier has never hit more than 15 home runs.
He's capable.
Yeah, 15 home runs in 2017. He hit 14 in 2019. And then there's a 12-1 season. There's a couple 10 home run seasons in there. That's it. He's actually only hit double-digit home runs five times since 2013, pardon me. So 15 home runs. So he essentially would have to hit 16 home runs or more for Eddie's prediction to come true. What do you think? You think that's possible? Is it doable?
I think it's doable. He has to double his total from last season. Something tells me, you know, like last year it was weird, because going into the season, talking about the ballpark renovations and whatnot, we thought it was going to play more favorably to the hitters, right? And that's traditionally what Rogers Center has been about. It's been a more hitter-friendly ballpark. Instead, it was the opposite. Like, for whatever reason, the Jays actually hit even worse at home than on the road, and it wasn't as friendly. Something tells me, man, it's going to be friendly. Like, I don't know why. It's just, we're due for some positive, not regression, progression, because that would be the opposite. So progression.
I say positive regression all the time. It's okay.
It's
fine.
Whatever. It's not, you know what? Everybody says it. Technically, it's not the proper terminology for it, because it's the opposite, right? It's a, what is it? Antonym? I don't know. Antonym, right? That's correct. That's
you're asking something
like that. Either way, I think it's going to work out positively. I could see it. That means he has to double his total. So he had 8 homers last year. He'd have to hit 16. It's possible. It's possible. I don't know how likely. It's possible.
But that's what makes it bold, though, I think.
I agree.
That if you're basically saying this guy's going to double his home run total from a year before, I think that does make it bold.
Speaking of your Springer prediction, quickly.
All right.
So he's hit 30 homers 3 times in his career.
Okay.
With the Blue Jays, his career high in homers since he joined the team in 2021 is 25. Now, take that with a bit of a grain of salt, because in 21, he only played 78 games and he had 22 homers.
Yeah.
He was looking really good in his first year with the Blue Jays.
Maybe it's not that bold then.
No, he's done it 3 times, but it has been a while. 2019 is the last time. That was when he hit a career high 39 homers, 96 RBI driven in for George Springer, which was also a career high. Since that point, though, we haven't seen that type of prodigious power from him. But I kind of like it, because everybody's in a stage right now, show, where they're all expecting him to regress, to be on the downside of his career, decline, and maybe he's due for a nice little renaissance season here with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Hey, I think everyone would take it. I think
for sure.
including George Springer, I'm going to guess. Brian in Toronto on the text line says, bold predictions. He's a lot of stolen base bold predictions. All of them are actually stolen base predictions. Unless SB stands for something I'm completely misreading, but I'm going to say they stand for stolen base. Bo Bichette, between 20 and 25 stolen bases. Kiermaier, 15 to 20. Springer, 15 to 20. Varsho, 15 to 20. Biggio, exactly 15 stolen bases for Kevin Biggio. I like the stolen base attempts because I think for all you kind of need more stolen bases from this team because, again, we talked about this in the pregame show, but there are not a lot of obvious stolen base threats, but it is a teensy bit easier because the bases are bigger. They're introducing that new rule this year where the runner can't block the base, where they can't like put their foot down in front of the bag when people are sliding into second, for example. So I'm sure that will in some way, shape or form help the attempt on a stolen base. Bold predictions from Mark in Elora. He has some stolen base predictions in here as well. Varsho has a 20-20 year, so 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases. His second bold prediction, Kirk and Jano combined to hit 30-plus home runs.
I like that.
And I do like that one as well. I like that one because I do think it somewhat implies two things, right? It implies a Kirk resurgence, and it also implies that Jano will stay healthy when once he comes back. So I do like the implication on both of those from Mark. And he also says Jays will win 90-plus games, and I think this ties into what you were saying, Daniele, get a wild card spot carried by their offense this year.
Nice.
So certainly being a top 10 offense does not guarantee they'll be a wild card spot, but I'm sure it will help if you think that the pitching will be in any way, shape, or form close to what it was last year.
Boy, and I can tell you, honestly, so last year we sat through a season of dominant pitching, and everybody just bemoaned how bad the offense was the whole time.
Yeah.
The whole time. I will say this now. I will declare this to be true. Factual. It's not an opinion. It's a fact. If the Blue Jays, if the roles are reversed and the offense is great, the pitching is meh, subpar, people will be super excited going into the
playoffs. You're probably
right. Complete opposite. The emotion, it will feel completely different. I don't know. Like, it's weird because baseball is equal parts offense, defense, 50-50. Pitching, like, it those two things matter and they have to contribute to winning together. But if the offense is lights out and they're hitting a ton of bombs and Vladdy's got 40 plus homers and Bo's winning a batting title and Kirk, Jansen, all these guys are holding their own and you get to October and the pitching's so-so, we'd still feel so much better compared to last year.
Well, it's because in a winner-take-all scenario, even if they've had down years, why wouldn't you still feel confident in, like, Kevin Gausman in, like, a one-game scenario? There's no real reason why you wouldn't. Even if he's had, like, a slightly below, he's not at the AL Cy Young level, but he's having an okay year, you still would feel all right about it.
If you had to pick one, if you said, okay, going into playoffs, a postseason series, if I could only pick one, I could either have the dominant pitching or a dominant offense. Which one would you pick?
Like from this current team?
In general, just baseball wise in general. If you're sitting there as a fan, as somebody involved in baseball, whatever, what would you pick?
It'd probably be the offense because that's more fun.
Yes, but I think in terms of winning,
we got the good pitching last year.
That's fair.
Well,
hold on. That's fair, but. But I think trying to think of good teams that could really pitch, like even the San Francisco Giants winning all their World Series, like their World Series, the three World Series that they won, they didn't have prodigious offensive players.
Yeah, that's true.
They didn't have guys hitting 20 homers. Brandon Belt won rings. He's a good player, but he wasn't out there hitting third and driving in 100 runs. Never. In fact, he never drove in more than 80 runs in a single season, yet he still won two World Series rings. Hunter Pence, great player. Everybody loves Hunter Pence. Was never a 30-100 guy. Buster Posey, never a 30-100 guy. Like, so you don't necessarily, quote-unquote, need that. It's fun. It's cute. It's nice. 15 and 16, we all remember. It's a lot of fun, but honestly, I know it's very. I don't even like saying it myself, but I think at that point of the year, the pitching is dominant. Having dominant pitching is probably more important.
I almost would take dominant relief pitching too, because that's gonna you often only go. I mean,
that's
yes,
true.
You need dominant starters. You do, absolutely. You do or dominant starting performances at the very least, right? Because they can come from unexpected places. But you also need great relief pitching and. The Blue Jays, that might be a bold prediction. Maybe it's a cold prediction, just because if you're a contender, that's the one thing you're always looking for at the trade deadline is better relief pitching, or maybe not better relief pitching, more relief pitching, essentially, just more options. And as we laid out earlier in the show, that's something the Blue Jays will want. Let's hear a little bit from one of our guest bold predictors. This is our first bold predictions guest caller, let's call it.
All right, bold prediction number one for 2024. going to go with a big name, and I'm going to keep it pretty simple here. Vlad Guerrero Jr. hits 40 bombs. Count on it. You heard it here first. Okay, second bold prediction for 2024. This is probably a little bolder than the first. I would say Dalton Varsho, he's going to end up on MVP ballots this year. And the reasoning for that is we know he's a great defender. We know he can really run the bases. And the other element of his game that we just haven't seen him put together fully is that offense. But based on everything that I've seen from him this spring, he looks really good offensively. He looks comfortable. And we know he's done it before, so it's not even that much of a reach. So as I kind of lay out that case there, yeah, it's like a little bit bold, but it's a really, really good major league player that we've already seen do these things in separate seasons. And I think if he puts it all together, then he's someone who, look, I'm not saying he's necessarily going to, you know, place ahead of Julio Rodriguez or, you know, necessarily those top players in the game, but I think he will be on MVP ballots in 2024.
So that is Sportsnet's Ben Nicholson-Smith, who caught up with me a couple of days ago. Very kind of him to do that. So this actually is in line, the second one there, in line with Curtis in Toronto texted in just now on the text line, 590-590. He also says Dalton Varsho MVP vote. So a lot of, one of my bold predictions, and I guess I can say it now that we're talking about Varsho. Sure. One of mine was that kind of to Mark and Elora's point, Mark had gone with a 20 home runs, 20 stolen bases. I had the same kind of prediction. It was just, I went with 30 home runs, 30 stolen bases. So I like that. I like that for Dalton Varsho. And I think a lot of people, based on what we've gotten in the spring, are predicting big things for Varsho this coming season.
I included Varsho on my list as well, and I had 30 homers. So I didn't have the stolen bases incorporated, but I did write Dalton Varsho will hit 30 home runs. And I think it's encouraging based on what we've seen from him in the spring.
Yeah.
We know how great he is defensively. Essentially, if you're going to go down the road of him getting to the level of actually garnering MVP votes, which, again, this is like we're talking to we're going from Earth to Mars here. But honestly, if we're going to make that jump, what we are looking at is it's going to be a confluence of factors. It's not just going to be his production at the plate. That will be a big part of it. Don't get me wrong, but it's going to be more of a collective in terms of the defense combined with the offense plus the base running. That is what would get him to the point where he's actually a viable option as somebody that can be discussed in the breadth of some of the game's best players. It'd have to be all of them, because I don't think offensively his ceiling will ever be at the level of, you know, a Yordan Alvarez or an Aaron Judge. That's never going to happen. That being said, is he capable? Do I think so? For sure, on any given year, to have 30 stolen bases or hit 30 homers? Yeah, I do. I actually do, because this is a guy that's still within the course, the macro of his MLB career. This is going to be his third full season. Like, you know, like, we got to remember that too. He went into his second full season last year, first as a full-time left fielder. And now this will be year two for him as a full-time left fielder playing with the Toronto Blue Jays. I think getting more comfortable, working through some tinkering with his swing, working through some of the issues he experienced last year. Yeah, I feel like he can be due for a really, really strong season.
I saw Dalton Varsho, albeit on the TV feed, but the Jays were in PNC at PNC Park in Pittsburgh, and I saw him hit a home run out of PNC Park into the Allegheny River. And I just kept thinking to myself, man, this guy has sneaky power, maybe? No one actually has sneaky power, maybe, is the way you put it in baseball, because like, these guys are are professional pros, athletes, right? But at the same time, it's something that does make me think you might see a little bit more power from Dalton Varsho. Let's hear our guest caller, bold predictor number two.
So I came with a couple smaller bold predictions instead of anything massive. I don't have the backbone to do hey, Vlad's going to hit 50 or even as bold as Vlad's going to WRC plus 125. Not quite that. But my main prediction, and this is a prediction coming into spring, it looks a little obvious now, but I think Bowden Francis is going to be a member of this rotation the entire year. I know there were some concerns of, well, he didn't pitch a ton of innings last year, whatever. He's about to turn 28. He's done three partial seasons in AAA. He's ready. All of the stuff, if you look at from a pitch design or pitch stuff aspect, that's there. The control's improved enough. I think, you know, demeanor-wise, that's the kind of guy who can shake off a good start or a bad start. But given that that one's a little obvious now, because we're recording this a day after he was told he won the rotation spot, he's running with it. I'll go to the bullpen. And I think that obviously right now the bullpen's fairly deep. There are not a lot of guys in there with options. So the bullpen, barring injury, might be what it is for right now. But what I will say is I think come September, come playoff time, a relief prospect by the name of Connor Cook is a meaningful part of this bullpen. He kind of made the jump last year from high A to double A and then to triple A at the end of the year. I know the Blue Jays were really high on some of their internal measures of what his stuff looks like. He has a nasty major league ready slider. The question with him is the fastball's a little flat and it's not elite. He does throw it from kind of a weird angle, so maybe there's enough deception there, but the question for him will be, can you get that fastball over enough to where, you know, I mean, we've seen relievers with like a 60-40 slider fastball split, but that can be a little dicey. The slider's real though, and I think he factors into the bullpen in a meaningful way at some point by the end of the year.
I like the Bowden Francis pick. Over under 130 innings for Bowden Francis?
I'll say slightly over.
Okay.
I'd imagine there's some spots where, who knows, maybe, you know, Manoah's back or Bowden's had a couple bad starts or whatever, and he shifts more into that long man. Or, hey, they've got a couple off days in a mix, so he's the guy who gets skipped. But I think I think that's a reasonable target. I probably would have set the over-under myself at like 125.
Sure.
So, yeah, I'll take the slight over on 130.
That is our own Blake Murphy from Jays Talk Plus, of course, the Raptors show as well. Blake, of course, will be doing, he told me, a couple of podcast-only editions of Jays Talk Plus that will be available on the podcast feed before the season starts, and he'll be doing an opening day live edition of Jays Talk Plus the morning of opening day as well, so keep an ear out for that if you are a fan of Blake, but kind of him to do that for me. I asked him about in Francis over-under. I just wanted a number from Blake just because he's really good at that kind of stuff, but 130 innings, you're taking the over. I think that does support what you were saying in theory about, you know, what Bowden Francis' role will be on this team, not just like as a spot starter or someone who's just filling in. That's a number of someone who could be an actual full-time number five starter in Major League Baseball, which is very impressive.
100%. I'm right there with Blake in terms of just declaring my support and full-on endorsement of Bowden Francis as a guy that I think is going to be a permanent fixture in the rotation throughout the duration of the season. He's not there to be, as I said, the placeholder for somebody else. And if anybody's going to push him, they're going to have to actually push him in a meaningful way. Otherwise, I think he's going to pitch well enough to be a true number five starter in an MLB rotation. And I love that. Just a couple things. One, Blake, and it amazes me. He's got sources on, you know, he's on the Raptors side of things and the Blue Jays. Like he's got people he's texting and calling on sides of the in both organizations. Pretty cool. And secondarily, of course, he would go with a guy that throws sliders. It's great. Just sliders. Never mind. The fastball doesn't play. It goes. And I even made this comment to you during the game today where I was saying, gosh, we're right in the same spot where we were last year where they don't have mutants at the back end that throw 99. Like here's Junior. I don't know how to pronounce this. Junior Marte? Junior. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, the Phillies righty,
yes,
coming out of the back end of their bullpen, who's an emerging bullpen arm, and he's coming out and throwing 98, 99. Like it's crazy to say. I was gonna say not overpowering, but you know, sitting 97 versus sitting 94, 95, it's a big deal. It's a big deal, and that was something we completely lamented for the majority of last season, the first half of the season. They went out and got Jordan Hicks. Well, they didn't do anything to replace that velocity. So we're in this same spot. So I don't know if Connor Cook is an answer there. I really I don't know. It's a good prediction. I like Blake going deep into the weeds with that one. But I don't know for a guy that unless his fastball plays up as Blake referenced, then it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough.
It's a pick very emblematic of the kinds of things Blake discusses very well.
For sure.
Which is why I like that he made that prediction. I do like the Bowden Francis prediction. I agree with you. The bullpen does need some heat, some flamethrower, someone who can step on the gas, I think, at the back end of the bullpen. But like I said, if they do go shopping at the deadline, I got to think that's going to be a conversation you and I will not have had the last of, Daniele. Let's put it that way.
For sure.
Yeah, I think we're going to be talking about this probably all year. Before we take a break, let's hear one more of our guest bold predictions.
Bold prediction number one, Justin Turner will be a below average MLB hitter this season. We're going to start with some pessimism. I did a piece during the offseason about players sort of age 39 or older and what level of success they're able to find. It's unbelievably rare for guys to have success at that age. His OPS has declined by about 25 points per season on average since 2018. So he's done well recently, but he's getting closer and closer to that average line. I see him dipping below it. Number two, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa will not lead the Blue Jays in third base starts. He has been presented as sort of the starting third baseman for the season. At the beginning of the year, he will be, but there are so many ways his playing time can be attacked, whether it is, you know, Ernie Clement coming through, one of the young guys later in the season, or Elvis Martinez or Addison Barger, whether Davis Schneider is able to be a longer-term second baseman and Biggio moves over, Votto coming in and becoming a full-time DH and Justin Turner playing more third base. A guy like him with limited offensive upside and so many threats around him, I think someone takes his job at some point. Number three, Blue Jays fans will not hate the Mitch White trade by the end of the season. This might be the boldest of all. His velocity has really come up in the offseason. I think he has potential to be a back-end starter or an interesting multi-inning reliever. And the guys going to the Dodgers have not looked as good recently. Nick Frasso, solid prospect, but 25 and wasn't great at AAA, getting a taste last year. All the hand-wringing about this deal may come to an end in 2024.
So that's Nick Ashbourne of The Athletic. Of course, Nick was doing Jay's Talk with me yesterday, and of course, he did it last week as well, last weekend, Saturday and Sunday, and Nick will be joining myself different times during the Jay's Talk season as the regular season progresses. But I like it. So a couple of good ones there. I know the IKF prediction is an interesting one because we have no idea really how second or third base are going to shake out, just because it kind of feels like there could be a multitude of answers at both positions. But I do like the idea from Nick on IKF, and the Mitch White one is funny because I don't think there are a lot of positive thoughts, let's call it, about Mitch White, just generally speaking. He has looked, I do think, better in the spring, but I feel like based on what we've gotten, if that does carry over to the regular season, then Nick will be right. Of course, it's also very easy for that not to be true based on the track record of Mitch White, even going back to just last season.
I say this as respectfully as possible. So I came into 2024 with one thing on my every.
There's no way you can follow up. I say this as respectfully as possible by having it be respectful. There's no way.
I'm trying. without being as offensive as I possibly can be. Each year for the last few years, I've come into the season with sort of one hobby horse of like, please, there's one thing I do not want to see. Come hell or high water, one thing. So last year it was Trent Thornton.
Right.
I did not want to see Trent Thornton. Sure enough, by May, Trent Thornton was there, okay? Didn't feel great. I was like, you know what? I'm done. I'm through with that experience. I don't want it. This year, it's Mitch White. I don't want it, but he's going to be there. I don't want it. I don't feel good about it. And whatever, you know, he's throwing, yes, I mean, it's crazy to me how his velocity has spiked so much. It's wild. He's throwing in the upper 90s. That being said, I still don't feel good when 45 is on the mound. And until he proves otherwise, I can't change my stance on that one. I can't. It's hard. That's one of my hobby horses, my 2024 hobby horses. I did not want to see 45 take the hill for the Blue Jays at all. And yet, we're going to see it probably
in
the first week.
Yeah, probably like later, in less than 7 days.
Yeah,
probably.
Goodness.
More than likely. Hey, maybe Nick will be right. Maybe you will be one of the people who gets their minds changed.
I hope so.
About Mitch White. That would probably mean good things for Mitch White.
100%.
I would think. Let's take a quick break here, Daniele. When we come back, we'll certainly read some more texts at 590-590. See a good one here from Brian in Scarborough. I'll read that one. Certainly a whole bunch of others as well. Kimmy in Bracebridge, Rob from Port Hope. Get to all of your texts. And we'll also hear a couple more bold predictions from some familiar voices you are used to hearing on Jays Talk and across the network. So Blue Jays Talk continues after this. Show and Daniele with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. All right, welcome back to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network, also on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. Show Ali, Daniele Franceschi here with you until the bottom of the hour. Doing bold predictions today. This is the final spring training edition of Jays Talk. Of course, Jays Talk will return with your phone calls after every Jays game this season. And that will start on Thursday with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. Blair and Barker, as usual, the schedule is unchanged from last year to this year. Blair and Barker will do Mondays to Fridays, and I will handle the weekends and essentially any other games Blair and Barker don't want to do. So that's how it works. They essentially just be like, hey, show, you want to do this game? All right, sure. Okay, that's fine with me. So that's essentially how it works. We want to read more of your texts, 590-590, name and location, right now on your bold prediction. Kimmy in Bracebridge, Jay's bold prediction. Jays make a blockbuster like Alomar Carter midseason trade. Oh. I love bold predictions like this because it's so fun. First of all, I love fake trades, but it's just fun to imagine who you could go get, right? And I remember last year, there were some predictions like this, and it was like the Blue Jays will trade for Salvador Perez. And I'm not clowning on any of these ones because I love imagining fake trades. I would love for that to be the case. It's just, I wonder what position you'd have to make a trade like that at. Like for me, it would be such a blockbuster trade would be like going to the Cardinals and getting Nolan Arenado. That would be, I think, that would qualify as a blockbuster trade.
I agree.
I think, would you be comfortable? The other side of that question for a lot of fake trades, Daniele, would be, are you comfortable giving up the prospects that would require to make such a trade, right? Like, would you be comfortable in giving up like a Relvis Martinez if it meant you could get Nolan Arenado, or Elvis Martinez plus, if it meant you could get Nolan Arenado, for example?
I think there's one guy in the prospect system that I would not trade. It's Ricky Tiedemann,
yeah.
Everybody else, Elvis included, on the table, go for it. Go for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I honestly, watching even a little bit of Addison Barger throughout spring training and now seeing him for a couple years, he's a trade me candidate. That's a piece. If you can include him in a trade that nets you something significant, I would 100% pull the trigger. 100%. And if he happens to be a decent player down the road, hey, come back to bite you, by all means, hand up, totally fine. But that's one I would be willing to trade for sure. You know, Aurelvis less so, like, but yeah, Tiedemann is the one I wouldn't touch. You know, it's funny. So I like this idea. I like what Kimmy suggested here and her bold prediction. Who would be the pieces that would have to move off the major league roster? Because if we're talking of something seismic, mm-hmm. it'd have to be current, everyday players that you're moving.
Yeah, you'd have to move, like, it'd have to be guys on the fringes, you would think. Would the Cardinals accept that? I don't know. But would they accept that if you're getting premier, quote-unquote, premier prospects? Maybe they would. But if you are trading Aurelvis Martinez and some other top flight prospects, like maybe not named Ricky Tiedemann, then would they take like the Ernie Clements and the Kevin Biggios of the world? I wonder.
I think I wouldn't. But here's an interesting one. Let's say George Springer comes out and has a respectable, relatively good start to the season, where he's hitting for power, playing every day, stays healthy. Would him paired with one of your prospects be enough to potentially sway a team to do something of consequence? Because that's the guy I circle. You're not trading Vlad and you're not trading Bo, for example. Even if you feel like there's room to improve, you're not doing that.
Yeah.
Right? Varsho hasn't, I don't think you're doing that. And he hasn't recouped enough value. He's also your best overall defender, even though he's in the outfield. He is a very good defender. Nobody's taking Kiermaier. He's a veteran. Nobody wants that. To me, it's potentially Springer. Like, if Springer does enough to recoup his value to the point where it feels like there's still some tread left on the tires, maybe he becomes an attractive trade chip.
Maybe that goes that ties well into my George Springer hits 30 home runs this year, 30 plus home runs this year. I'll take that.
Exactly.
Let's hear a little bit more from some of our guest bold predictors. Let's hear number four.
I'll start off with maybe the biggest addition that the Blue Jays made in a lot of the fans' eyes in the offseason. Justin Turner, a guy who's entering his age 39 season, who only played 58 games in the field last year, and that's not 58 starts, it's just 58 games overall. I'm going to say that Justin Turner plays 95 games in the field this year, that they let him play a little bit more at third, especially than he did last year. Only played 7 times at third last year for the Red Sox, largely because Rafael Devers was there and there was no point. There's a little bit more of an offense-defense platoon you could make for the Blue Jays with IKF and Turner at third. So I'm going to say that Turner, between third base, first base, which he played over 40 times last year, and maybe even a little bit of second as well, which he's played in his career, cobbles together 95 games in the field. Maybe not 95 starts, but I think he gets into the field 95 times. Number two, Alejandro Kirk has had a very impressive spring, and it's hard to put too much into spring numbers, but Kirk, when he is right, is one of the best offensive catchers in baseball, won the Silver Slugger in 2022. I'm going to say that Alejandro Kirk hits 20 homers for the first time in his major league career. He only has 31 homers career in 331 games, hitting a career best 14 in 2022, but I could see Kirk, especially with the big workload he's going to get at the start of the season, if he's right, really, really having a big offensive season. So I'm going to say that Kirk hits 20 homers in his first for the first time in his career. At number three, I go to the defensive side. Last year, we saw a big jump from Bo Bichette after back-to-back 20-error seasons. Last season, he committed just 8 errors at shortstop and moved to about league average when you look at some of the advanced defensive metrics. Well, I'm going to say that trend continues, and he moves all the way up into the upper echelon of the defending shortstops in the American League. I'm going to say that Bo Bichette is a Gold Glove finalist. I won't go as far. Maybe it's not bold enough. I'm not going to go as far as giving him the Gold Glove yet. There are a lot of really, really good shortstops in the American League, but I think that Bo Bichette can be a Gold Glove finalist, in my bold predictions at least, at short. Swinging around to the pitching side, Chad Green is expected to be a big part of the Blue Jays bullpen in his first full healthy season with Toronto after spending most of last year on the injured list. Green was one of the best relievers in baseball a couple years ago, and I think that he can reach that point. I'm going to say even surpass that Chad Green has a career year. What does that mean exactly? It's a little bit subjective, but if you look at his 2017 where he had a sub-2 ERA and struck out 100 guys in 69 innings, I think he can do something like that. Maybe put up a career high in saves if the Blue Jays have to deal with some minor ailments to the back end of their bullpen to start the year. So I think Chad Green has a career year. And my final one, I had to put Joey Votto on my bold predictions list. So I'll say Joey Votto has an Albert Pujols-esque send-off season. Pujols, if you remember, in 22, hit 24 home runs in 109 games, was way above average in terms of most of his offensive stats, and made the All-Star game. And I wouldn't say that it was all just kind of a fan vote favoritism to Pujols thing. He was legitimately a very strong hitter for St. Louis in that last year. I'll say that Votto has a similar thing. Maybe he hits, you know, 25 to 30 home runs, plays in a good handful of games for the Blue Jays. And if he does, it probably means Justin Turner plays a lot in the field as well, because Votto will be kind of a first base DH guy. So my 1 and 5 tying in together. Do I truly believe that these are going to happen? I don't know. But I love bold predictions, and I at least got like 1 or 2 of my 10 right last year between the preseason and midseason. So that's what I got, Joe.
So that's Ben Shulman, Blue Jays radio voice. Of course, you will hear for every game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben, I know Ben loves bold predictions, and he's very good at being bold, so I needed to get some from him. I like the Joey Votto one. I like the Alejandro Kirk one. I hadn't actually realized until he said it that Kirk only had around 30 career home runs.
14 when he was an All-Star.
Yeah, so if it's 20 or more, I don't think it's possible and bold because he's never done it before. So I do think that's definitely a positive one. And of course, Chad Green, I think that would play well into your idea of Chad Green maybe getting that a chance as closer by committee, but maybe becoming, in the absence of Jordan Romano, maybe someone a little more important in high leverage situations.
Honestly, inject the Justin Turner one into my veins. Okay. I like it. All right. Want to see him more in the field. I've been advocating for, I know he's 39, but heck, if you get into leverage moments down the stretch of the season, I'd like to see him more in the field.
We have a couple more bold predictions to get to, and then we'll wrap up with the ones on the text line here. One more of our two remaining guest bold predictions.
So as you know, I'm not huge on bold predictions. I'm like Winston from New Girl, right? It's either too big or it's too small and insignificant. So we're going to give this a try here. Number one, Vlad Guerrero Jr. will hit 20 or more homers in the first half of the season. I know that 1 or 2 years ago, this would not be a bold prediction, but here we are. We've seen what we've seen from Guerrero, but I do think that he is going to find his power stroke again, and he'll get on pace maybe to eclipse even 40 homers for the first time since 2021. Last year, Guerrero hit 13 in the first half. So this is, it's a big increase for him, but he's clearly in better shape this year. He is pulling the ball more again, which is something that we look for when we talk about Vladdy. Number two, maybe not super, super bold, but here we go. Bo Bichette plays 162 games. He has yet to do so in his career, but we know that playing every day is something that he is extremely proud of. Obviously, last year he dealt with some injuries, and so he couldn't do it. But again, another guy that's entering his prime, and he's really in great shape coming into camp here. He looks super healthy, and he feels super healthy as well. So this is something that I believe has a good chance of happening this year. Bichette has a very good blueprint for himself in terms of his routine, in terms of his preparation. And listen, if the Blue Jays get 162 out of him, this is a guy that has led the league in hits two consecutive seasons before last year, when he obviously had the injury issues. He couldn't play that much. So imagine what this offense is going to look like if you can get 162 out of Bichette. It should be pretty exciting. Number three, and probably the boldest of my predictions here, show is Yariel Rodriguez makes the team out of camp. There are so many injuries right now to this pitching staff, both on the starting rotation side and in the bullpen. And now we are entering, you know, the roster decisions type of situation here. And it seems like Rodriguez has a better chance than he did when camp opened to actually make this team out of camp. John Schneider did mention him last Friday, saying that Rodriguez is kind of a wild card to make the roster. So it's very clear that he is in the mix. He didn't pitch at all last year. So the Blue Jays, you know, the initial plan seems to be, okay, let's build him up. Let's maybe start him in AAA and get him to really ramp up so that he can be utilized in a different way in the major leagues when he comes to that. This is a guy that can give you starts or can also give you long relief outings. But as we see Gausman, Manoah, Jordan Romano, Eric Swanson, all of these guys, you know, dealing with ailments, all of a sudden Rodriguez becomes very important right away. And I believe that there is a possibility he is going to make the team out of camp. It does depend on what the Blue Jays see from him in the final days and where his stuff is, how he's executing. Can he stay in the zone with his pitches? And so that will be a decision between him, Zach Pop, Nate Pearson, a guy like Wes Parsons or Brendan Little. There are several options, but he is very, very highly regarded. And you know that this is someone that the Blue Jays are betting on big time. So my boldest prediction, show, Yariel Rodriguez makes the team out of camp.
So that's Julia Kreutz, who, of course, will be doing Jays Talk with me throughout the season, as she has for the last couple of years. Julia, with the – so I like the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. 20 bombs in the first half. Because when she said that initially, I was like, 20 bombs, Julia? Like, come on. Hit 20 home runs. But then she was like, in the second half and I thought, oh, okay, that's a little bit more bold. Bo Bichette playing 162, I think that definitely hinges on any kind of injuries. But he has taken steps, to Julia's point, that he's not going to – he's going to be healthier and more flexible, pliable, mm-hmm. to use a borrower term from Tom Brady. And certainly as well, Yariel Rodriguez. I know you are not as bullish on Yariel Rodriguez.
No, it's not that I'm not bullish on him. I just think you got to be more patient.
Okay.
Right. Exercise some patience. Don't rush the process. So I feel like because of the fact, as Julia referenced there, he didn't pitch last year. He's been away from the game a little bit. And they've invested significant amount of resources into him for the long haul. Just try and temper it, be a little bit patient, and wait for the right moment to bring him up to the major leagues. I think he will pitch. It's just a matter of when. And I think it would be wise to let him just let him simmer a little bit in the minors.
I saved the best guest predictions for last. We saved the best, most familiar voice that you will hear on this program for last. Let's hear it.
Hi, everybody. This is Jeff Blair, host of Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan at Sportsnet, with a couple of Blue Jays predictions for you. Now, I'll admit, the only thing slower than Alejandro Kirk running the bases has been my inclination to get on board the Kirk Express. But you know what? That's all in the past. I see a big year for Alejandro Kirk. How about an 820 OPS? Something that could be crucial for an organization that has spent so much time preaching internal improvement. And if you want to see a return to the All-Star game for Alejandro Kirk, hey, I'm on board with that as well. Want something else positive? Well, I've said I thought Bo Bichette will win a batting title at some point in his career, and I'll bet he takes a shot at it in 2024 before finishing with an average north of 320 to 325. And for reference, Yandy Diaz's 330 led the AL in 2023. Bo came in third at 306. And Don't ask me who's going to be in Bo's right side in 2024, though, because I have IKF down for, I don't know, maybe 50, 60 starts at third. I'm just not certain he's there by the time the All-Star break rolls around, folks. Of course, that could just be wishful thinking on my part.
Jeff Blair with the bold predictions. Of course, Blair will be handling this program as soon as Thursday. But Blair couldn't resist the Kirk and the IKF discussions there. I like all of those bold predictions, honestly.
They're all
ones the Blue Jays need as a team.
For sure. The Kirk one, I mean, it's funny. I feel a little vindicated because I also wrote down Kirk will be an all-star.
There you go. Okay.
And then even Blair mentioned it. I'm like, great, I'm not dumb. I know something. At least I think. So that would be one where I feel pretty good and feel confident about that now, having the validation of one Jeff Blair. In addition to that, what was the other one, show? Where were the other ones that
Bo wins a batting title?
That one seems like almost an inevitability at some point. Yeah, it's going to happen. Like, it's going to happen. He's too good of a hitter. As long as he stays, same thing with Julia. As long as he stays healthy, I could honestly see a guy like that pushing for all 162 and potentially trying to win the batting title or at least lead the league in hits, which we've seen him do a bunch already. And what was Jeff's last
IKF,
one?
IKF 50 starts or less.
This one I'm very torn on, man. I know we've kind of gone a little bit back and forth off air. We had a few discussions. I'm a little bit torn on it because I think it's going to be north of that. I really do.
I see a couple of more texts here on the text line in the last couple of minutes here. Paul from Oshawa, Blue Jays will win the wild card. I like that. I think he means the wild card game, like not a spot in the playoffs, but like the wild card
series.
Yeah, the series now. So I like that from Paul. Brian in Scarborough, my nephew said the Varsho trade was the absolute worst trade ever and that Varsho stinks. My prediction is that he will go on the big screen at Rogers Center and apologizes to Varsho. I need to know how old your nephew is, Brian. Like, are we talking about, like, is he like our age or is he like a little kid?
Because he's 13 years old.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you feel like
Tell him!
I'm
sorry!
Rob from Port Hope says he has an AL East standings prediction, best case scenario, Orioles 102 wins, Jays 92 wins, Yankees 90 wins, Rays 85 wins, Red Sox 75 wins.
Interesting.
So he's basically saying the Orioles win one more game than they did last year and that the Jays win three more games, which I actually do think is a relatively bold prediction.
Mm-hmm.
Tobias from the region of Waterloo, Ernie Clement, everyday third baseman by mid-May and has a higher OPS plus than Matt Chapman. I like that one. So a lot of really bold predictions from the listeners, from our guests, and from you, Daniele. This is a lot of fun.
Oh, a lot of fun, show. Love doing it. Always a pleasure. Really cool. Great to be on with you.
Always fun. My last couple bold predictions. Bo wins a silver slugger in his top five in MVP. And Yusei Kikuchi signs an in-season contract extension. And one we share, Ricky Tiedemann makes 10-plus starts for the Blue Jays this season.
We're both on that train,
Let's go. Let's go. That's Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. Appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Rust Protection. Protect your vehicle from rust today. For a special offer, find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Daniele Franceschi, Ben Schulman, Chris LaRue, Jason Behringer, Tom Young, I'm Sho. That does it for us. That does it for Jay Stock this spring. Blair and Barker will take your calls on Thursday evening. I can't wait for the regular season. I look forward to chatting with you all. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on opening day.